Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Marty Oakley of the PPJ Gazette Online, and this is the TS Radio Network. Our show tonight is Whistleblowers. We're doing two shows this week, and our guest will be Carrie Devora. What we're going to be talking about is Ponzi scams and the SEC. Before that, I want to remind everybody these shows are presented in coordination with Marcel Reed and the Whistleblower Summit that takes place the end of July every year in Washington, D.C. Hope you all can make it. We had such a good turnout this last year. I was really quite surprised and humbled by how many people did show up. It was just, it was fierce. What we're going to be talking about tonight is little games that go on in the stock market with investors and scams that are running Ponzi schemes, that kind of thing. And our guest, Carrie, had direct impact and input on a case that just got adjudicated and the person got sentenced to 20 years in prison. Carrie, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Marty. My pleasure being your guest.
Yes, I love having you on. Carrie, give everybody a little bit of background of what happened here, what this is about.
What this is about, it starts 10 years ago. I was a client. You and I chatted pre-show about the market's impact on many, many people. Well, I got hit by two advisors, one I left and one I went to. And in the middle of them was Bernard Madoff. And I remember Brad Pitt saying, you know, with his movie that he had done, like, why do these people never go to jail? And sometimes you hear something said that sticks with you forever. So I found an attorney, and we argued my claim, I thought, in the right forum. I did not know then that there is a culture of corruption in Wall Street, and then there's a culture of people that just don't care. They're all about the cash, and I got caught up in both of them. But I'm a documents girl. I got a little bit of training there. And to figure things out, I began to put documents together, back to back, and papers tell the story. Every whistleblower knows that. It's not what we say, it's what we find and what we share. And what I was sharing was absolutely damaging to Wall Street. The Ponzi scammer, the SEC, asked me about to help them. They asked me. I'm non-industry. I was an investment client victim. They asked me to provide them my papers, which I did in time, but specifically on multiple parties. In time, I learned that the SEC takes the information in and they do what I call curating it. They arrange the papers to tell the story they want told. Hence, I've become the whistleblower on the SEC too. I learned that all the information I gave them on Don Bennett, the hoodoo investment advisor, as she's nicknamed, they did nothing with that. They used the information to protect the securities broker-dealer firms. So you mentioned the Whistleblower Summit. It was amazing to attend and be at the luncheon. It was amazing to be acknowledged as a whistleblower on the SEC and FINRA, more so because the next day, on July 31st, I was sitting in federal court in Maryland where the sentencing was being held for Don Bennett, the, as they call it, the hoodoo investment advisor. I'll explain that now. She used clients' monies, like almost $1 million of it, to have Buddhist priests in India allegedly chant spells to split the tongues of the SEC and FINRA attorneys, and bought all the
what?
Yeah, Marty, you and I know we can't make this stuff up.
any Christmas.
The FBI report.
Okay.
I think she's using people from New Mexico also to cast hoodoo spells. She had a beef tongue splitting spell, and the FBI pictures showed her freezer packed with these beautiful colored red and green and blue goop. I mean, you and I would call it, from a designer's perspective, the Pennsylvania color of blue and red and green bottles with the packed, and a coffin freezer packed with this stuff. And the initials of the SEC attorneys were written on them: Brendan Glynn, Patricia Paw, Michael Rinaldi. And she had been sentenced, and the U.S. attorneys and the court invite clients to come, former clients, current victims, to give victim impact statements. So I go from one day being acknowledged for sticking on the backside of this woman to the point of making sure that she did go to jail. And there was a lot of information and blockage in between of people that didn't know what the laws were, people that intentionally didn't care what the laws were. A lot of interference between the protecting the victim, who was a client at one time, and getting true justice. I mean, Felicity Huffman just got 2 weeks for what?
Oh. And
she got, the Ponzi, in the scam with the college scandal. This woman, Dawn Bennett, got 20 years in federal prison, which sent a message to Wall Street. But I sat there listening to these elderly men and women who never should have become victims had the SEC done diligence, as they led me to believe in 2010. Had they told me that they do nothing with the information, I wouldn't have given them everything they needed to cover crimes up, but were misled to believe that they are enforcement. But we hear it as law enforcement, as cops, not at all. They have enforcement.
Right.
It's like in the description of Monday you go here, Tuesday you go there, Wednesday you go there. That's not cop talk. That's not what cops do.
Right.
And I sat there listening to men and women who were participating witnesses for the United States government for the federal court in Greenbelt, Maryland, elderly men and women, a handful of who were local, who made it their point to give of their day to speak to their Ponzi scammer, to the person who scammed them. And the stories broke my heart. There was an elderly woman that had become a client, but also was undergoing chemo treatment. She had breast cancer. And you say something often enough, you find a way to, curate it is a word I like these days. So her story, I told that she lost $300,000 and both of her breasts to a Ponzi scammer. It's heartbreaking. There was a witness that stood there at the sentencing commission. She worked for the DOD, loves the military, and Dawn Bennett was very good at what she did. She curated her pitch to what she believed the person she was going to scam wanted to hear. When I met her in my case, I was struggling with a disability in walking. And she said, I'll get you a trainer, anything you need. When you're hurting, that sounds good. So with this other lady, she worked at the DOD, and Dawn pitched her about the military. This is testimony in the courts. It's all vetable. And Dawn talked about new types of military gear that she was working on and things that would be applicable to the military. So this woman lives in the city of Baltimore, Jean Dalmas. She put up money, and only to find out she lost it all. So her testimony, she said what it's done to her, it's absolutely destroyed her life. She struggles with the reality that her work has been impacted. If you work at the DOD, Marty, If you have a financial crime or a financial change, at the DOC,
yes.
You're a civilian, you have to report it. So
yes.
Here she had to tell her bosses, I got scammed by someone who took hundreds of thousands of dollars from me. Then she talked about going to bed at night. And as I recall the words, and it's not 100% correct, was that she looks at the cocktail and wonders if it's the night is the night. There was another another victim. She kept driving up post-trial for the occasional hearings that were going up until the sentencing. This woman drove from Pennsylvania, Ms. Jenkins. She made it her point because she wanted John Beck and the court to weigh into the sentencing. Her life changed. Her husband had worked for years. They had everything set up for a retirement with their kids, with their grandkids. Her husband has suffered a heart attack at age 73. He's working at Walmart. And he could not get off from work. Yeah. And he couldn't get off from work because it's $15 an hour he needs. And to take 2-3 days off to come to D.C., he couldn't afford. So you sit there and you go, how did the SEC, how do they, these employees, sleep at night knowing that this woman, Dawn Bennett, who's exemplary of countless of the other cases the SEC takes hold of, because Dawn Bennett and many other people in some matters don't belong in the SEC forms, which are now done away with because of my proactivity. We can talk a little bit about how the SEC had created their, like, mini court within the regulator. Well, I exposed the paper. And the Supreme Court came down with a ruling that says, you can't do that. The SEC is scrambling. FINRA is scrambling. Where these cases go to is law enforcement. The final decision was that she got 20 years. It doesn't end there. Marty, it does not end there. Do you know what this woman did?
What?
She appealed to the Fourth Circuit in Virginia.
Okay.
She's still maintaining innocence.
Jerry, I'm still trying to get past her casting spells and stuff. And she actually sold people on this?
The spells people didn't know about. We all found out during the trial. We all found out actually when the FBI filed their affidavit back in August of 2017. What people believed was that she was number 5 in America, according to Barron's. Barron's is a global standard for investment advisors.
Yes.
We're led to believe that. Well, Dawn Bennett is the example that shows that, no, they are not the gold standard Barron's. She paid for that position. She didn't have $1 billion under management when she paid for that ranking. She didn't
have a
lot of the other information that was filled out. Yeah, so it's very, very scary. What came out during the after the FBI filed their affidavit was crazy. This woman had rented a getaway house. Now, you and I would think in terms of weekends getaway. No. For her, it was, I'll escape from Maryland to New Mexico, and I'll hole up there at this premier ranch cottage that I've rented for $10,000 a month.
Oh, my God.
And she tried to claim that was her residency. She just didn't pick a hole in the wall Motel 6 or Motel 8 or anything a day's in. She had picked a cottage that was in a house that was in the premier magazines for real estate, a place that was just like a museum quality. the judges' eyes popped out of their head when they saw that. This is a woman that has had a holier than thou. She knew the cases of all of the victims. Everybody said, we can't afford to lose this money. And that was what we watched here in the trial. What you see here in this trial is how a judge matured from being someone who thought everybody had a potential for good into realizing this woman had no potential and no remorse. Her co-conspirator. So to understand, again, 2010, I tell the SEC about Don Bennett, Western International Security, its CEO, Donald Beesub, Don's company, Bennett Group Financial Services, and of J.P. Morgan and their involvement as the clearinghouse. The confirmation the SEC sent me a few months later in December 2010 only mentioned Bennett Group Financial Services, which you don't see things at first, and you handle papers over and over and over again, and something pops out differently. And I began to wonder, why did it mention only that one entity and not everyone else? When the SEC finally began to file a matter, a claim against Don Bennett, was in 2016. But it wasn't because the SEC wanted to. 2015 is when Don Bennett was caught in a bank in Maryland with one of her elderly victims, a very sweet lady, Diane Keefe, caught on camera, caught on audio, where Don Bennett is standing with her at the bank saying, take out this money, we're going to wire it to my account. She was driving this victim. Yeah, she was driving this victim from the victim's work to Don Bennett's, to the victim's bank, to transfer money to Don Bennett, and then driving the woman back. And at age 80, this woman figured she had about another year left to work, needed the money, and even wrote an email saying, I had so much fun. This opportunist was honing in on a woman's loneliness, on all of our.
Right.
Not just loneliness. It's, you know, if someone's talking to you and they're purported to us and we believe that they are everything that they are, sometimes you consider it really neat, very nice, important, that you're important, that you're visible, only to find out that the only thing visible to Don Bennett was Miss Keefe's money.
Oh, wow.
The FBI...
Oh, that's sad.
It's tragic. So stories like this, I mean, I heard about the woman who had her breasts removed months into the pretrial. I've learned so much about how this aspect of the criminal justice system works. I think it's important to share with people. When someone gets arrested, they are, if they are booked and incarcerated, they're usually left out on their own recognizance. The magistrate in Greenbelt Federal Court, Magistrate Sullivan, watched Ms. Bennett in his courtroom and was so alarmed by what he was seeing and hearing and reading, he put her pretty soon into prison. So pre-trial, this woman that the trial papers say is a danger to society, was in jail for 2+ years.
Oh, my God.
The victims, I mean, can you imagine you're at home and one day there's a knock on the door and they say, hi, we're the FBI. And you look at them and say, well, how are you? And they say, you've got no money left. That's basically
They
were. So the SEC in 2016, enforcement, not law enforcement, had already gone into Ms. Bennett's offices and papers and only presented to the FBI only 46 victims. Are there more?
Yeah,
in another hearing, her co-conspirator had said they had 1,200 clients. You don't steal from 46. You usually, when you've been doing this scam for decades, you steal from everybody. And it's a take from Peter to pay Paul. And lives were turned upside down. So in 2000, so here you go. 6 years, the SEC knew about her crimes and her crimes that profited the securities broker-dealer firm, the investment advisory firm, and the clearinghouse that she affiliated with, and they did nothing. To me.
Oh, my God.
So, and imagine that. Well, in Don Bennett's building in D.C., where her office was based, the guy that scammed Mike Tyson, an advisor by the name of Brian Arand, he ran his Ponzi scheme there. So there's a different way to reading the headlines that I'm doing my best to help people see clearer, to understand, you know, what has been going on. So the fact that she's appealing it, well, the question is, she's been using public defenders. She's claiming indigency. Where is this money coming from? Her co-conspirator, Bradley Maskow, was sentenced August 28th. And that was interesting for me to be there. But more so, I had testified at the Virginia Sentencing Commission on Gun Rights on August 20th in Richmond. What does whistleblowing and financial crime have to do with gun rights is the logical question. Well, the answer is there are more financial crime victims most likely out there than there are gun victims, opioid victims, even possibly suicide victims combined. But no one knows, because when there is a financial crime, cops don't show up. They're not told. Everybody is rightly concerned about these gun crimes going on. I'm also concerned about the financial crimes that have left elderly people and others destitute. So August 28th.
Carrie, what I'm getting from this is everything was done to protect her. Actually, and the institution she was working with and through. And without, like when they asked you for all your documents and papers, everything, there was no intention to use those to solidify a case against her. Am I correct?
Absolutely correct. Spot on. It was a resource and an ongoing resource that countless whistleblowers are turning papers over to the SEC and do not understand.
Okay.
We're never going to get that whistleblower award. Learned that one the hard way also when I figured out it's not written for us. The attorney, Michael Rinaldi, who worked for the SEC and now works for the DOJ, Department of Justice, one day he sort of let loose accidentally, said, well, you're never going to get anything. And I went, what are you talking about? I filled out two papers he had sent me. It's called a Form 1662. That's the application.
Okay.
You complete the Form 1662, providing your information, who you're whistleblowing on. You attach your documents, and they then proceed forward on their investigation. And allegedly, there's a conclusion that you're going to get a percentage of. Percentages are being paid out. If I told you, Marty, that the too many of the percentages are being paid out to former attorneys who worked for the SEC in the whistleblower department.
Yes.
But then,
I've heard this. Yeah, I've heard this from many, many whistleblowers, and the CBS show. On whistleblowers is always presented in a way the only people they put on there, Carrie, are people who supposedly got a reward, and what you get is 10% of what the government recovered, and they never get it, or if they get anything, it is a very far reduced amount because the attorneys land on it, and it was set up so that the IRS came in and took everything immediately. but now most of it goes to the attorneys, and most of these people never see a dime, yet they'll keep saying, oh, so-and-so won so much, you know, so many millions of dollars. That's a, yeah, it's just another scam.
Oh, I'm on this. I'm on this. You got to trust it. I am on top of this. There is something in government that when you leave a job, there is a period of time you have to keep your distance from the job. And the former head of the SEC whistleblower office, a Sean McKasey, left the job in 2016 and within a very short time was on cases. And I'm going down that track looking into it. I've got papers that I'm looking for information, FOIA. I'm told I'm a regular FOIA submitter at the SEC. But, Marty, if you went onto the SEC's website and you looked at the FOIA submitters, you may find my name there five or six times, that's it. So I've learned to develop a network. And my network has other people watching what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. So it's not just me. They know it's not just me watching for the answers.
McKasey, right.
What they count on is that the whistleblowers who get paid won't tell people they got paid. Something gorgeous about man and human nature, they like to tell people. A bunch of these lawyer whistleblowers are publishing online how much they got paid as being the whistleblower on certain matters. I keep on finding those little bits of information. And I also know other people who have submitted information and been successful. Mm-hmm. In the resolution has been successful, but they've gotten nothing. Now, you said something about the IRS.
Right.
I learned along the way is you just don't send the information to one person. I sent simultaneous submissions to the IRS, Internal Revenue Service, to FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority. They are the self-regulatory organization that the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, had appointed, sort of compliant to a law Congress wrote. And I also sent the U.S. Postal Service. The IRS told me I was wrong about Don Bennett and the affiliated persons and entities. And I would write back, you're wrong. And I would send more papers.
Right.
And they would tell me, you're wrong. So that started back in 2012. Trial was the month of October. And what do you think I found out in trial?
What?
You know the answer, that the SEC went in there and collected money. So now that I have that document, and I have someone else, I call them friends that I attach and I CC into my emails and letters, I will be getting back to the IRS. But you and I also heard at the summit about the role of the Office of the Inspector General.
Yes.
He's learning at this point a little bit more about what theory is and what really goes on. I have been in touch with SEC, OIG, and the IRS and others. We'll see where it goes. I don't expect Rome to be built in a day, but I do know that way back I was told, why don't you just stop, you know, just move on with your life. Well, I also have it. But, you know, my relationship, I tell people, to this is similar to that of the felon. I'm in bad faith for having not told the truth back at the FINRA dispute resolution in 2013. The same truth, the exact same documents and testimonies of other victims that incarcerated this woman, sentenced her to 20 years. So I want my name cleaned up. And I tell people, if you're not going to clean it up, it's my cape. I put it on my back, and I do my Supergirl stance, and I go out again today to change the world. About 2 weeks ago,
yeah,
I
yes.
confirmation that in the state of Virginia, the Commonwealth of Virginia, based upon my providing papers, one of my proposed bills has become a bill. It is now, you can't force mandatory arbitration on investment clients.
Wow. Well.
If someone's persistent.
Carrie,
sure.
Yeah.
Oh, you were going to ask.
I want to go back. Yeah, I wanted to ask you another question. Going back to the spell casting, I'm sorry, this has just freaked me out.
It gets better. No. It gets better. Special exercise in Keith Custer's photographs, and he's not a photographer, but he did gorgeous with these shots, showed freezer shots of the hoodoo's tongue-splitting spell that Dawn Bennett paid monies for to split the tongues.
And
of
she
the
actually believes it, she actually believed this worked.
Oh, wait. We were not. Yes. I think we've got more. She found a guy who testified at trial. He came in and he testified at trial that she had paid him over $860,000, I think it was, to set up a chant spell with a Buddhist temple in India, and they were also going to spell to protect her. Oh, it was like these scams we see on TV where they use photographs to hustle donations constantly, and you don't even know who and where that child is or if they ever existed.
Yes.
So this man explained. So he was asked, are you a Buddhist priest? And he said, well, in India, I would be considered one, or I could be considered one. And in America, no. He described that he lived in California at the furthermost part of the state, and that he was a former high school teacher. And he had like a menu for the spell you want. Do you want one chant or four? You want a morning chant or an evening chant? So if one looks online, they're reading part of the story that the AP news guy that I got to come in, that he wrote, they're limited to 500 words. It's the rest of the story that is just mind-blowing. And if that's not enough, they had the guy that sold the curing gemstones to buy. Spent hundreds of thousands on that too.
Did it occur to the court this woman wasn't in her right mind?
It occurred to the court clearly that she knew what she was doing. She did get 20 years. There was no claim of mental disability. Her defense counsel did try to pull the stunt that the court was mocking or challenging his client's Buddhist beliefs.
Oh.
So she tried freedom of religious protection. This is...
Right.
I can't say she's not crazy. Marty, the question I tell people to gauge someone by is to ask someone, what would you do if no one's around? And I would not do this to someone. But knowing this woman saw no problem with it. And there's nothing what's online says that she's brilliant, that she's successful, that she's wealthy. She lived in two penthouses joined side by side. One was filled
with... Good
Lord. She had a closet, the FBI affidavit included, that was filled with black pants, black shoes, black belts, black shirts. I mean, a wall-to-wall room with racks like you would find in a Nordstrom, all black.
Wow.
And then her freezer. And then there was the next-door apartment that she... I guess there's the dressing apartment and the chanting apartment.
Oh.
And then there's the living apartment. Museum-quality antiques, Asian antiques. Artwork that was expensive. Some of the pieces cited were worth, in the FBI, you know, evidence papers, some of the pieces were worth millions of dollars. So is it...
Oh, my Lord.
Is it a right person, is it crazy or not? She has no moral sense. But you could get that
yeah.
when her father showed up in court. Initially, the judges were, the magistrates were considering sending her home with her father and her mother to stay there under home arrest, trusting that they
uh-huh.
would make sure she didn't break any of the court's restrictions or guidelines. And the father testified, is blanking on his first name right now, he was former CIA. The judge
oh, my
asked,
Lord.
Oh, it gets better. He, you know, just said, ah, wonderful. We know we can do okay with sending your daughter home to you. Well, they ultimately didn't do that. Something happened. She left the courtroom of the judge after being told, you know, you can't contact any of the victims that we've named to this suit. And they narrowed the window
mm-hmm.
to the years 2015 to 2017. Most of these victims were clients going back 5, 10, 20 years. So the Ponzi scam had been going for years. The client needed money.
Yeah.
She found it for them. She brought in more money. So when a person goes to court, especially in a criminal trial, you know, note to everybody out there in Blog Talk Land, when a person goes to court, to jail, you're being recorded. So when you make
mm-hmm.
a call out, you know, there's like the government's listening in. And the government
yes.
played a clip. Dawn's father was sitting in the courtroom, two rows back behind her. And they played the clip of Dawn Bennett talking to one of her associates who was not charged, a John Corey. We'll come back to how that may still happen yet, but she's talking to John and she screams at him, "Don't be like my father, be like me." Corey was trying to say, "Your lawyers told you not to talk about the stuff on the..." Her mind was set on where she was going to go, and nothing Corey was going to be heard. The couple of things that have happened in the fallout of Dawn Bennett's papers being widely shared by me, the Supreme Court has clarified a couple of decisions, one of which is that if you are sued in a federal court and convicted in a federal court, you can still be sued and convicted in a state court.
Yes.
So all of these other associates, even Dawn Bennett herself and her associate Brad Maskell, but the ones not yet pursued by law, they do need to still be worried. There was recently Jeff Epstein and the question about Jeff Epstein.
Yes.
Now, can they open this up to the states? Yeah. Yeah. We need to figure out what's going on the federal level that's shutting these cases down, that's sealing motions and covering up things from other people that want to explore. I'm asking
questions.
But, there was one story about her with the jeweler. They had the jeweler that was custom making her jewelry with requested stones that she was told was going to protect her. She lost her behind her stove and apparently was quite excitable because she had lost it and required similar of that ring being remade and gotten to her immediately. Now, I can't remember how many thousands of dollars that ring was. But I know that the gentleman working at Walmart misses
mm-hmm.
his money.
Yeah.
Her,
I think,
show she
Terry,
did, go ahead.
I think, well, go ahead. I think what bothers me when I hear things like this is that people that like this Dawn who did all this stuff, all this ridiculous, I mean, to me, it's ridiculous. This goes beyond eccentricity, and it gets into something else entirely. And that they never give a thought to the people whose lives they destroyed. I don't know if this is a true sociopath. I don't know what this is. I don't know how to describe these people, but it's like there is no consideration whatsoever for the people they harmed, and they actually destroy other people's lives while they do this. And then to engage in this bizarre behavior is just that they would even be considering sending her. Now, let's put you or me in that same position. Had we done anything remotely like this to another individual, particularly an elderly person, we'd be under the prison for the rest of our lives. No questions asked. But here she's being considered to go home to her parents' house. And this dual system that runs where, you know, well, she's wealthy and she's this and she's that. Well, we can't send her to prison.
I can address that. I've done it publicly multiple times, and in what I write and put out online and in my podcast when I get time to work on it, she had no priors, according to the arguments of her defense counsel and according to the evidence that the FBI and the U.S. attorney could present to the court. What I've brought public all of this is how the court doesn't see the truth. See, from Wall Street's perspective, Wall Street had, and I'm talking about FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, and people on the Securities Exchange Commission, employees of the SEC. What they did was they worked with lawyers, their lawyers, to create rules and guidelines that facilitated their goal. And their goal is paying out as little money as possible, which means getting caught as little as possible, and keeping down or mitigating public embarrassment, which means no police reports. The SEC is actively collecting a lot of these cases and pulling them into the SEC, or until I came along, they were doing that in their private little court where things didn't get turned over to cops. I helped build a crime lab at a police department. I think cops are important people, and they want to do a good job, but nobody's been telling them about the financial crimes. That said, FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, they marched out their minions teaching law enforcement, media, NAGS, the National Association of Governors, and countless other resources, that if you got a financial problem, the first ones to call is not Ghostbusters, but FINRA. And I sat there down at MPDC one meeting with some officers and said, no, it says right here on their website, you investment clients go to court. And that they have, and this email here says that we have no authority to take criminal action. The officers had never seen that before. Now, I think I've been really too effective because the SEC removed that guidance off their website. I've shared around enough and gotten enough people to understand that I am not Chicken Little out there making up information. I had documents, and these documents keep on being replaced. But the dent in FINRA has been made. The reason, early on, you know, when I was found in bad faith, I mean, I worked my whole life to build a good name, and I've always done a good job at pretty much everything I've set my mind to. So having it on the internet that, you know, I was in bad faith for not telling the truth, to me it harms not just my pride, but I believe it harms my ability in the work world. Unless I told you again, I just Sally or Daisy do right. I put my hands on my hips and I let my cape flow in the breeze and I go, you know, da-da-da-da-da-da, I'm here. sort of a fun visual. I'm working on a character for that. But I guess this way. Eric Garner went to jail because the cops knew where to find him. This was my mind process at the time. Bernard Madoff turned himself in. He said they knew. Soon after, Eric Garner was down on the sidewalk, and he died. He'd been arrested 11 times. So with those two examples side to side, I began to look for papers, began to find documents. Madoff's crimes, Marty, were first known in 1963, but they never got called a crime.
Oh.
Harry Markopoulos, Harry Markopoulos never told the cops. First thing I did when I began to figure things out was I told the cops. My problem was the cops didn't get it because they had been going to financial crime school classes taught by FINRA. They're now getting different. But Eric Garner had been arrested 11 times for selling loose cigarettes, which meant the first arrest put him into the system, where if someone ran his name, they would know his name, his address, his phone number, anything they wanted about him. But if they put Bernard Madoff's name into the system, they would find nothing. I found papers showing Madoff's first nothing there or no product agreement or not a charge. It's because it's not law enforcement area. It's FINRA's made up. This is our playground, and you play in our playground under our rules. He was fined $500 in 1963. You better be sitting down. You're going to love this one. Bernard Madoff learned his crime at the kitchen table from his mom and dad. The Securities and Exchange Commission had censured his mom and dad 3 years earlier. The crimes never get told. My podcast is named Exposed, Wall Street Secrets, Warren Buffett Does Not Tell Investors. Well, for two reasons. Someone said if you include Buffett's name, people pay attention. But I also knew that it's a numbers game. It's either he either has or has not been Ponzi'd. 3 months later, news came out from the DOJ that Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaways had been a victim of a Ponzi scam to the tune of $347 million.
Oh, my God.
Who knew the thing is, who knew about it?
Oh, my God.
But Marty, the Securities and Exchange Commission knew this 2.5 years earlier. And I found that's the window of time. I'm a patterns girl. I'm from a design background.
Yeah.
I see images. I see patterns. The pattern is if something comes out from the SEC as a statement, you watch the news, SEC, Ponzi scam, criminal, let's say Joe Blow from Kokomo. You know, have to know that the SEC knew about this person 2 to 2.5 years earlier. Again, the SEC is not law enforcement either. They have no authority to take a crime into their lawyers' offices and to go through documents. They have no authority to go into a suspected crime office or to engage with the investment clients or the advisors, the victims, or anybody. That's not what they're allowed by Congress to do. I covered news as a retirement career in the D.C. area. I covered the White House and Capitol Hill. You spend time around these things, around these offices and these hearings, you eventually pick things up. I covered the Hill during the crash. 2008 is when I went to call RBC and say, sell me out now. The guy didn't. I didn't find out until after my FINRA arbitration why he didn't. They had emptied my accounts, and they were Ponzi scamming me also. I was lucky to get out when
I did. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, and it was only because I'm watching the market crash, and I'm saying, you know, get me out. This is not good. When FINRA and RBC sent me papers, finally, it was in 2012. It was an encrypted CD with 800-plus encrypted PDFs on it. I wasn't walking at that time, so I had plenty of time to sit around and open up each file and see what they sent me, because I had been asking free FINRA for 3 years for copies of my statements. I had been recommended in 2002 to be an online client, and I had no idea that they were going in. They took out my Social Security number, put in someone else's birth date, took off my email address. They were reworking the statements every month, even more, for almost 2000, for almost 10 years. And I had no idea.
Oh, my God.
So these are the things that I said. I was fortunate to get back most of my principal in that, in the RBC matter. But I also didn't realize at the time that I had figured out a scam that they were involved in. What does the SEC do? We hear the news that says that the Securities and Exchange Commission fines somebody. Well, if you went to court, you wouldn't have a conclusion of being fined. You'd have a conclusion of going to jail or being found on probation or something like that. It's not how the SEC and FINRA work. They take that money.
Wow.
And they get judgments. If it was against you and me, they'd put us in jail to collect the judgment against their
yes.
own people.
Yes, yes, ma'am.
I found out
yes.
the hard way by listening to someone. It's the way, you know, you learn the information always when you least expect it. So you always have to be listening.
Yes.
Someone had said something
yep.
to me about when you get a judgment, you have to go record it in the court and to collect it. So I asked, with the Don Bennett matter, where did you record the judgment? The SEC said that they were going to charge her $4.4 million. And I said, I want the recorded judgment. It's never been recorded because they don't intend to.
Right.
Right. It's really
very... Can we find this
very...
with everything?
Yeah,
this
but
is
love...
this is Carrie. Oh, go ahead.
So I was going to say, I love solving problems. I mean, since I was a kid, if there was a ball of wool that was all knotted up, I was the one that everybody gave it to. Because I could sit there and would figure out what went where and what had to be pulled away from there, and I would always manage to put that tangled ball of wool back together in one piece. And that's what I'm doing here, is solving a problem.
Okay.
And letting people know.
Wow.
That's the most important thing. The
yeah.
challenge for every whistleblower is having people believe us.
Yeah.
The you know as a whistleblower.
I think the problems, Carrie, I think the problems have become so widespread and so pervasive in everything that the days of saying, oh, well, they're just, you know, they're a disgruntled employee or they don't know what they're talking. They made that. That's all over with. There's too many of them. And the summit alone is such a huge event now that they, you know, people have drifted away from this. Oh, they didn't. Oh, well, I don't think that really happened. And they probably misunderstood, you know, all of this stuff they usually assign to people who blew the whistle on what was going on. And besides that, they can't keep a lid on it anymore. It's out there on everything.
The latter
is out there.
What I agree with most is that it can't be kept a lid on anymore. On the other hand, we've
right.
got the challenge of the internet. Things that, are,
yes.
that people can pay to suppress rankings and people
yes.
can pay to promote rankings. So
yes.
they're still working
and
against
they do
them.
It.
Yeah.
Yep.
I had.
We're getting out there. Carrie, I was going to say we've got about 5 minutes left here, and I did want to talk about that movie.
yeah. I told you, I saw the movie yesterday. I had a choice going over to check out Amazon's employment day. I was curious about it. I'm a couple of blocks away.
Uh-huh.
And I went, to heck with it. I'm going to go see Hustler, the Jennifer Lopez movie. Epic, epic, epic. Textbook.
Oh,
if
wow.
I taught a college course on crime and fraud and understanding the psyche, I would haul this movie out and say, this is our study course for the semester. She, she dealt with the other side or deals with the theme of the other side of Wall Street, the men that go there and just blew the money. She even says herself this money is stolen money. But you get
yeah.
to understand where the victims' monies go, how so little, how desensitized these people are. That's a problem with the computer world. It lets criminals be seen faster. It also lets criminals hide deeper and disappear into ghosting. But I would tell people, go see that movie. Professor Carrie Devra says, go see Hustler and have in mind victims' perspective. That is a dollar.
Right.
Those dollars at Wad being thrown at the strippers on the stage is something that came out of a victim who is 80 years old and has nothing left to live on.
Oh, wow.
She covers it briefly. For me, that movie is textbook. Crime 101.
Wow.
Sort of what the people, the Wall Street people did. It's all a tease, isn't it? It's all glass and mirrors
yeah.
and strutting and
yep.
whatever they want to hear. She says that to the
girls.
It
is, too.
Yeah, she says you tell them what they want to hear. You figure them out. That's what I told you about Dawn Bennett. She figured out
mm-hmm.
what would make her victims part with their money.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think behind this is a level of anger, Carrie. Like I say, this preferential treatment, the softening of what actually happened, where if it was just a common person out here that had scammed somebody, like I say, there'd be no end to what they would do to them. And this thing of allowing someone who had delved in this much corruption and scamming people would be even considered for the option of being allowed to go stay with her parents is just a big flag on how, like I say, we have a duplicitous system. There is a system for the wealthy and well-to-do and the politically connected, and then there's the system for the rest of us. And us is going to go to prison while they are not. I'm surprised that she did. I truly am.
Oh, don't be.
Because in the scheme of things.
Yep, I stuck to her back.
Go ahead.
And I said, this is going to stop. Hundreds of thousands of Virginia felons got back their voting dignity because of her, because of me. And because those people got, because I exposed what I told you, Bernard Madoff's papers. I made it idiot-proof
uh-huh.
in terms of presentation, showing President Obama had commuted the sentences of 45 people in 2015. So I copied
mm-hmm.
that, pasted that into a Word document, interspersed those people with 45 persons from FINRA, from Wall Street, who had issues that Wall Street, that FINRA made note of. And I matched them in the same month and year. So if there was a commutant from June 2015, I found someone, and from their state, let's say Florida, I found someone in FINRA's broker check that have the same. Now, I tell people also, so I made the argument very clear. You could see that this person served no time for kiting checks, for emptying bank
right.
accounts, stealing identity, and this other person for a little bit of drugs went to jail for 10 years.
Yeah.
But I also
yes.
remind
yes.
people, FINRA broker check is not what we are told it is. It is a sales tool prepared by the securities broker dealer firms that are covering up the crimes by the Dawn Bennetts. Marty, within 7 days of Dawn Bennett being convicted, multiple firms descended on the 46 elderly men and women whose names were not public. They were not in the, and contact information was not in the court system, in the court transcripts. Yet somehow lawyers from around the country found these poor men and women and took them away from courts where they should be into FINRA. A person who lost $4 million for special need child got back about $1 million.
Wow.
This is
Carrie. We're out of time. I got about 30 seconds left here. I should have planned more time. I'm still trying to get over the spell casting. Good Lord.
Would you like
me
to
email
you
to get you back on?
Of it?
Yes, please. And I want to see this, but we're going to have Terry back on here in a couple of weeks. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. This was an excellent show, Carrie. We will see you tomorrow night for a second episode of Whistleblowers. Thanks, everybody, and good night.
Good night.